Well, once again, I looked at something on Twitter right as the program was starting, and I have to chuckle. Sam Harris, one of the horsemen of the new atheism or apocalypse, or I don't know what it is. Anyway, on January 20th, had tweeted, feeling overwhelming gratitude for the adults in the room. So this is at the election. And 12 minutes ago, he tweeted, publicly eating these words, syllable by syllable. Yeah. Well, hey, let's just be honest. You may be like me in that seeing your nation humiliated, dependent upon Taliban fighters for security, sharing, not only arming the Taliban to the teeth because we created a fold-up Afghan army, but sharing intel with the Taliban. And in fact, we've given the Taliban a list of not only all of the Americans still there, but the people who worked with us. I mean, that's a kill list. That's a kill list. The people in charge right now are infantile morons. Or it is all the purposeful desire to fundamentally remove America from the world stage, turn us into Britain. Remember the British going into World War II? The British Empire, her navy ruling the waves? And how did she come out of World War II? Second-class power on the decline, which has continued. And Britain doesn't have near the influence on the world stage that it did 60, 70 years ago. That's where we're headed. And properly so. I'm sorry. We're coming up on the anniversary of 9/11. Remember? Well, that's going to be a really stinking day, isn't it? Because the people who did it and the nation that was behind it just kicked our tushes right out of the country because of a regime that is intending to bring that about. That's their intention. We've been taken over by an enemy power, and it came up from within, and the system was susceptible to it, and there you go. And those of you who voted for that group, congratulations. You've done well. But on, I think it was 9/13, I'm sure we have the archive someplace. I'll bet you it's on Sermon Audio someplace. And my recollection was it was September 13th that I did a program. I did a Dividing Line program. And the main line I remember from that program was, how can we say anything other than God bless America with soul-shattering repentance? That's the only thing that you can say, God bless America. Because everyone's starting to wave the flag and sing country songs and stuff like that. And for a few weeks, there was real unity and rah-rah and patriotism. And I even said back then, I said, I don't see any fundamental change. We were woken up by it, to be sure. But it didn't. No one was willing to say this happened because even evangelicals have become so secular in their thought that the role that the prophets had in saying to Israel, you are being punished, you are experiencing this drought, you're experiencing this invasion, you're experiencing this plague because of your sin. You have done this and this and this and this, and you've broken this covenant and that covenant, and you're oppressing the poor and run on down the line. And most evangelicals just are not willing to even begin to say that anymore. And to be honest with you, if we say it on social media, we are risking disappearing. Just poof, you're gone. If you dare say that the government of the United States of America has been spending your tax dollars, if there is such a thing anymore, is there such a thing as tax dollars anymore when we're never going to pay this debt off? You just run the printing presses until the gears fall out? Is that, I don't know. But the United States, around the world, and in places like Afghanistan, since Obama, has been pushing a social justice, leftist, neo-Marxist, secular worldview, flying the homosexual flag from the flagpoles, and trying to push people in other nations, including Afghanistan, to adopt this transgender, homosexual, gay marriage debacle, fiasco. And they know better. They know better. But we were using our power to promote perversity in these nations. Is there really any foundation for going, huh, I wonder why God would so humiliate a people as this? Maybe because we're promoting sin in the land? Maybe because we are taking the blessings that God has given to us and using those blessings to promote hatred for him? Maybe? Oh, but you're not allowed to say that. Not if you want to be taken seriously. It's like, I saw somebody yesterday, you know, the guy that invented the mRNA vaccine technology has been saying, we're doing this all wrong. We're screwing this up. We're not even close here. And I actually put a quote out from him where he said, the first rule, once you're stuck in the ditch, is to stop digging. And we're just doubling down on digging. So just give more shots. You know, he recognizes that bad stuff is happening and that we've gone the wrong direction. But somebody else, I think as a result of that, posted a link to a video of the guy on Rumble. And the response of somebody was, well, it's on Rumble. Yeah, did you see that? So if it's on YouTube now, it's approved by Big Brother. And if it's anyplace else, then it's not approved. And therefore, you don't even have to deal with what the guy's saying. It's just, there is a deception. If you won't love the truth, God will cause you to love a lie. And oh my goodness, are we seeing that all around us right now? The ability even of ostensible Christians to miss the elephants in the room is astounding. And I think it's part of judgment. It is God judging this nation. There's more judgments to come. And we're headed to obscurity. And yet, you need to understand, your very comfortable, cushy lifestyle in the United States of America is not going to last. And mine isn't either. Our wonderfully stable electrical grid, except in California. Well, California gives an idea of what's going to be coming. But the comfort that we have, man, it's going to be rough here in Phoenix. When you have brownouts and blackouts and stuff like that during the summer, it's going to be ugly. But it's coming. It's coming. Unless something massively major happens, unless there is everybody all at once stands up and says, this is it. We're closing the borders. We're stopping the invasion. We're making sure only people who have a vested interest in this country are going to get the vote for what happens in this country. And we're going to kick the enemies who've taken over this country out. Unless something like that happens, which has to be associated, this is the point, it has to be associated with repentance of and rejection of the secular worldview. And that's what I'm not seeing. That's what I'm not seeing. And so, yeah, what a day to be seeing this stuff going on. And then you had, and I had to comment on, I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't have. Did you see what Todd Starnes said? Todd Starnes said, the guy, the Christian guy on Fox. No. Oh, he's been suffering? Well, maybe that explains the stupid thing he said on Twitter. But Todd Starnes today on Twitter said, for every American who dies in Afghanistan, we should obliterate an Afghan city. Just wipe it off the face of the earth. Oh, yeah. It's like, okay. Yeah, there you go. You do know that there are innocent people in those cities, that aren't part of the Taliban, and they're actually Christians and stuff like that, just. Okay. Anyway. So many things to look at here. Okay. Where do I even start? I've got stuff here on the screen. I've got so many articles. Before I forget it, almost 2 weeks ago now, when I was up at the Grace Agenda Conference, as I said, I preached the second service at the Logos Fieldhouse, the gymnasium at the Logos School. They call it Logos. Guys, please. I even complained while I was up there. It was like, it could be Logos, it could be Logos. It cannot be Logos, and it cannot be Logos. It's just not possible, but anyway. And it's a polygia, too, I know. So I guess I'm a hypocrite. Anyway, after the service, I was standing at the back. Pastor Wilson had said that most of the folks go out that door there, so that's normally where I gravitate toward if you want to meet people and things like that. So all these wonderful conversations. That's one of the reasons we're doing the road tripping thing is, I stopped at a little church in Las Vegas, had a great time with the elders up there. I mentioned that they were all younger than my youngest, and had great food. I'm still raving about that roast I had. I still need to send that recipe in, please. I want that recipe. I want to make that myself. It was so simple. I mean, it was just beef on rice, but it was wonderful. But we great conversation over the table and meeting people. And I got to meet a bunch of people from Jeff Neal's church that were up there. And so I sort of felt like I got to catch up a little bit with what's going on with Pastor Neal. We co-authored The Same Sex Controversy together, and he had a stroke about 6-8 months ago. Now maybe 9, I forget when it was. We're all getting old, although he's only, I think, a year older than I am. But just that opportunity of talking to people, and a young man came up to me, and he was talking about how much the ministry had meant to him and giving guidance to him, he gave me this. I guess it's a coin that, well, it does, he says it does have a can opener, a bottle opener built into it. But he says this was the last one, but a coin they had struck for their class when they graduated. And he wanted me to have it. And I was just like, we've never met. And I can't tell you how many people this last trip said the same thing. They said, I feel like we're old friends, but you don't have any idea who I am. We've never met. But I watched the dividing line. I've now met at least 10 people who want to be Algo, and who claim to be Algo, the Algo of the Northwest or the Southeast, whatever it is. I think I've listened to all the dividing lines more than once. I think I know as much as Algo, and it's just, normally I don't really know exactly what to say when someone says you just can't know how much his ministry has meant to me, or how you got me out of out of this place or into a much better place and stuff like that. So it's exciting to be looking forward to G3 and get to talk with folks again and be in the exhibit hall and meet with people and collect an incredible menagerie of bacteria on my hands from all the handshaking and everything else. Just to hear all the stories, and I do hear them, and I deeply appreciate them. They mean the world to me, and I'm looking forward to doing that. And we just over the past 24 hours, I have amended my travel route. And by the way, I did want to say something about this. I've amended my travel route, which is one of the nice things about this. You know, you can go, oh, okay, well. If I go that direction, then that's going to make for a long day on Wednesday, and it's going to make a long day on one of the Wednesdays. But we can shift things around. And by the way, if you've sent in a road trip, single word, at aomin.org, roadtrip@aomin.org, that's how you get put onto the map that I use that allows me to make these visits at various places. At the same time, please realize, just because I'm driving through an interstate within 20 miles of you, it doesn't mean that I can always stop. Sometimes I've got long days. I'm trying to get a long distance. I've got to get up early the next morning and put another long day of driving in, and I can't do anything. Sometimes it's something really practical, like laundry. gotta make a Wally World run just to have some food or something. Sometimes there's just really basic. I'm traveling alone. People are like, "You're traveling alone?" Yep, I'm traveling alone. I ain't taking him. Are you kidding? The whole reason that we've lasted as long as we have is his office is down there, mine's over there, and trying to stay in the same small, less than 30 foot long RV, end of the ministry. oh yeah, let alone the truck. No, I'd stick you in the back and lock you in during the drive. I just sort of see what would be left of you after all that bouncing around back there. That would be interesting. So you don't have someone who goes, no, you're doing all the setup yourself. Yep. You're connecting the fifth wheel to the truck and disconnecting it and setting up all the electricity and the water and the sewer. Yep. That's backing that thing in. Uh-huh. That's right here. So once in a while. So the point is, if you've sent that information in, then we've got it. And then these aren't the only trips we're taking. So we're going to be taking a lot of other trips. And so we hope to be able to hit folks. And if there's a couple churches in an area, maybe I can get everybody together and do stuff like that. All that to say, one of the things I want to do on this trip is to get by the Strip Mall Seminary, where I've been before it was called the Strip Mall Seminary. So Grace Bible Seminary in Arkansas. And so we've set that up, and lo and behold, we'll probably have, I'll be able to give you more details, but it looks like we're going to end up doing a whole conference Sunday night into Monday with Owen Strand and Jeff Johnson and myself on the solas of the Reformation. That just popped up, and it's like, okay. I said, as long as at some point along the way we get to record something on CBGM, because that was one of the main reasons I wanted to stop there, was to record something on CBGM. And then, in a rather providential way, an opportunity opened up, change routes, only 2.5 hours away, the next day to do something at a small church a little bit north of that, and we'll put word out on that. That's going to mean a 7.5 hour drive the next day to get into Atlanta, but we'll do what we need to do. And then at G3, and then somehow on the way back, I'm not sure exactly when it's going to be, but somehow on the way back, Tom Buck and I are going to be getting together, and we're going to try to do something, but it's, I'm not sure when yet and what the driving times are going to be and stuff like that. So, cool stuff coming up. That's going to be exciting. And we're going to be down in Valparaiso, I think, or something, whatever it is, next to Niceville in Florida, right after G3. And I do need to let people know, because we've talked about it on the program, Dr. Stauffer, Doug Stauffer, who had been doing a series of Bible studies about how wrong I am, how I'm in it for the money, et cetera, et cetera. I had called about 3 weeks ago and left a message and had sent emails and had not heard anything back. But he called me yesterday morning. And the only thing I can say right now is what he said was he'll pray about it. But I'm hoping, because I'm going to be there, I'm going to get there on Sunday, the Sunday after G3. I will be there. And there are some churches cooperating in that particular area to find a larger location so we can do stuff together. And I'm going to speak on the reliability of the New Testament on that Sunday. And then on Monday, either I'm going to do a presentation against King James onlyism, demonstrating the problems, demonstrating why it's a concern, demonstrating why it damages Christian apologetics, et cetera, et cetera, and responding specifically to Doug Stauffer's claims about Titus 2:13 and his arguments in his book on that subject. Or if he decides to step up to the plate, then we'll do a debate that night right there in the Valparaiso, Niceville area. And that'd be the Monday after G3. So that would be really, really interesting if that worked out. We'll see if it does or doesn't. Yeah, so that's stuff that's going to be coming up, and that will be very interesting. Now, I responded to and played a portion of Todd Friel's comments on that were specifically generated. There are a couple things. There needs to be, and I'm hoping to arrange to do this, there needs to be a correction of Todd's misunderstanding of what the doctrine of the lesser magistrate is. It's not that any old person can just decide what they want to do. That's not what the lesser magistrate is. That's not what the doctrine is. And it's not that any old sheriff can just decide whatever he wants or any of these things. He misrepresented that. But the key issue that I could tell was the commentary that was given, the understanding that Todd expressed, which people have contacted me and said has always been his position. So this is nothing new for him. It's always been his position that Romans 13 needs to be taken in not only as broadly a way as possible, but within a framework, how do you describe this? A fundamentally non-reformed framework. Now, Todd would say that he is certainly friendly toward reformed theology, but once you start talking about reformed and then start talking about church-state relations, then you've got a lot of history. And you've got sacralism. You have Luther. You have Calvin. You have Zwingli. You've got Bucer. And right there, you've got many differences just between those names I just listed. Many differences. You have developments within even the understanding of the Westminster Confession of Faith. The American Westminster is different than the British Westminster in regards to some of these very issues, because things changed over the years. And so you've got a lot of stuff that has to be factored into this particular conversation. It gets very, very, very complex. But one element that is common amongst Reformed, any Reformed discussion of, for example, the interpretation of Romans chapter 13 or any of the text related to church and state and the individual Christian, is the issue of ultimate authorities and what has become, for better or for worse, identified in our day as two-kingdom thinking, two-kingdom theology. And most evangelicals have imbibed a view of this without ever having an inkling that there are multiple perspectives out there historically, and that what and that the options that are being presented to them have been fought over for a long, long time. And so I remember in seminary when it first really hit me that the method of church governance that I was accustomed to really had no New Testament validity or foundation. A pastor, single pastor, who is hired by a board of deacons who can fire him the first time he preaches a sermon they don't like. And I've been in those situations. I remember when I'm just reading in Acts going, well, there was a plurality of elders, and the elders weren't deacons, and there was no deacon board. And what's this all about? I had never even thought about it. So we tend to imbibe things. It's just the tradition that we've taken in. And there's nothing wrong with taking in a tradition that way, but you need to realize that that's where it came from, and that there are going to be other perspectives out there. And the tendency amongst conservatives is you encounter somebody that has a different perspective, and your knee-jerk reaction is, well, they can't be Christians. So we end up dividing over a lot of stuff that is purely traditional on our part. And when it comes to church-state relations, we are coming out of a period of time in the United States of America where we didn't have to think a whole lot about it. We could get away with ignoring it and implicitly embracing a concept of neutrality that we could trust, and some of the two kingdom guys is some of the terminology they use, that we could trust common grace, that we could trust the common operations of natural law to restrain government and to allow government to function without it taking a stand on the lordship of Christ. And in fact, that's certainly how I was raised. You never really thought about how those two were related to one another. You didn't feel like the church had a prophetic role in calling the state to submission to Christ. The state just did its thing over there, and you do your part there. And I think that's why you have so many churches where you've got those flags up front. You know, you got your Christian flag and you got your American flag, and they're on the opposite ends of the room because they really don't have much to do with each other. Or you have just the craziness of First Baptist Dallas, where they just, and I don't know where these, I don't know where the this certain strain of fundamentalism came from, but have you noticed how many of the IFB preacher clips, bad sermon clips and stuff on YouTube and Twitter and stuff like that, how many of them have red, white, and blue bunting and flags and stuff? You know, it's like, what is all that? Well, there are just a lot of people have the idea that that's that realm, and this is the spiritual realm, and there's just this huge chasm fixed between the two. And part of that is because historically, there's been so many times when the two have gotten intermixed that the clear delineation of those things is difficult for us to map out. We don't talk about it as much as we should have. That's one of the reasons I'm really excited about getting Joe Boot's new book, Ruler of Kings. One of the chapters that I had to listen to about four times was on the difference between the kingdom and the church. That the kingdom is a bigger thing than the church. And how often have we been even challenged to think about, well, what is the relationship between church and kingdom? Aren't they the same thing? And if you don't think that through, and if you don't look at that very carefully, you're going to end up with some real confusions that are out there. And there are certain eschatological systems that just have those confusions built in. They're just simply a part of the system. Then you combine that, sorry I'm going long, but then you combine that with the issue of God's law. I told y'all that, and it worked really well, by the way, and it's looking good, and I think it's going to last a while, but I had a, it's not a bumper sticker because it's on the front of the fifth wheel, but I had a sticker made to cover over the model number. Actually, I took the model number sticker off, so it should last even longer. You've seen it. Were you like, oh, cool. But it says, by what standard? But it says, by what standard backwards? Because that's what's in my rearview mirror. Every time I automatically look at the rearview mirror and can't see anything, there's a light and by what standard? Question mark. And that is a perfect, that is a necessarily valid question for our day. What is the standard? And there are a number of systems of evangelical theology and Roman Catholic theology that have no meaningful answer to that, in the sense that they do not believe that God's law can function as a standard in the modern world, or that it was ever intended to. And this is a great area of debate, obviously. But fundamentally, you end up with people telling, they sense that we need to be able to say to the world that God has a standard by which they're going to be judged. But they don't want to say what it is, because there is such a deep strain of antinomianism amongst evangelicals and Western Christians as a whole, and such a deep ignorance of the law as it's found in the inspired, God-breathed scriptures. A law that Paul said was good and holy and just and proper, and we established the law and blah, 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 blah. Never for justification, but always for the representation of God's holy intentions, purpose, and will for mankind. So we have a standard. And this is all in the background then, very complex background, in Romans 13. So if you come to Romans 13 without a high view of God's law, without a belief that it is God's law that is going to define for us what is ta agathon, the good, what is evil, that defines for us the roles of these things. If you don't have that, then Romans 13 is going to be really difficult to handle, because you're going to end up with contradictions. You're going to end up with Peter in Acts 12 doing one thing, becoming a fugitive from the state, and then Paul, four chapters later, doesn't leave his prison cell. Now, there's a reason there's a difference between the two. And I've been thinking about this because a good friend of mine up in Boulder asked me about this. He asked me, you know, I heard what you said about what happens with Peter. And, you know, the angel makes the chains fall off his hands and takes him out of the prison and tells him to skedaddle. And so he does what he's told to do, even though this makes him a fugitive. I mean, and the guards who guard him are executed. And then Herod himself, in the same chapter, God executes him. And so there's a way of interpreting Romans 13 where you just turn around and say, Peter blew it, the angel blew it, et cetera, et cetera. But then in Acts 16, Philippian jailer, earthquake takes place, and the doors come open, and the jailer's about to kill himself, but they're still in there. Well, there's an obvious difference between the two. There was no angel that gave specific direction to Paul and his companions to head out on the lam. There was a purpose here, and the purpose was, in essence, to help build the church at Philippi. And I'm sure the jailer was a part of that. So it was a different kind of situation with a different end result. You don't have a Herod being judged and struck down by God type situation. Instead, you have a redemptive, salvific situation with the house of the Philippian jailer and evangelism going on, in essence. So they're very different contexts. But you'd end up with conflict if that's how you end up taking Romans chapter 13. So as I listened to Todd's other presentation, I promised I would, and I did. I got to the point where I'm like, okay, here's why we have very different understandings of this. Here's why we have very different understandings. We have different understandings because when we get to verses 3 and 4, he understands, he's heard the other side. And when discussing, for rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it, that authority, is a minister of God, eis ta agathon, for your good. But, eon de ta kakan poi eis, if you do what is evil, then fear, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. So clearly, you have agathos, you have kakan, standard words, and here's what was missing, Todd, in my opinion, in where you're going. Because even when you mentioned verses 3, 4, and 5, and said there are people that, you know, they understand this to be the key issue in regards to Romans 13, what you didn't mention are the people who say, and the Apostle Paul would therefore have defined agathos and kakan on the basis of God's law. God's law. By what standard? And so there is a standard that is to be utilized. So if the minister bears the sword and brings wrath on the one who practices good rather than evil, is that? And see, this is where I say there is an objective standard for both realms. They're for Paul, they're one here, in that you have one law that's determining this. The state does not get to determine agathos and kakos. The state doesn't get to determine that. God's already determined that. And that's the issue. So if the state brings the sword to promote evil rather than good, then what are you to do? Well, it sounded to me, because this perspective was not one of the options that Todd presented, that you have to submit to it. And obviously, there have been many, 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 many situations down through the centuries when Christians were unjustly subjected to evil And what that means then is those who did that will be judged for the evil they committed. I remember once when I was at this one conference and the issue came up. Do I believe that political leaders today will be punished for the things they do in their political office? And so Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, et cetera, promoting the murder of unborn children. And I said, of course. And the other people at the conference said, no, because what they're doing is in that realm, not in this realm, and you're only judged for what's in this realm. Very radical distinction between the two. I don't see how it's even possible. Because if you accept that kind of radical distinction between the two, then you literally have the Apostle Paul saying that the state has the right to determine what is good and what is evil. And there is no way on God's green earth the Apostle Paul thought that God had created an entire system and set it up over here and made it autonomous to where it's not under the decree of his own law. And here's the other thing, to where it's not under the lordship of the one he has raised to his right hand and given all authority in heaven and in earth. There's the other issue. There's the other issue. And so, as soon as I heard Todd deal with verses 3, 4, and 5, and not even bring that, he only saw two perspectives, and the perspective I just presented was just dismissed. Maybe not purposefully, but it just wasn't included. And the reality is, folks, more and more people, thankfully, I believe, thankfully, sorry, I clicked on the thing and Disclosed TV has a tweet, came out 24 minutes ago, and for some reason it's popped. There's a Marine guard outside the door at the White House, and it's raining. And then all of a sudden, there's a flash, and lightning strikes nearby. And you see the Marine guard go, and then the Marine guard opens the door and disappears. I think I'm gonna go inside now. My duty position. And he walked very nice, very, very marinely inside. I'm getting out of here. Chris commented too. He said, I'm going in too. Sorry, I got distracted there. Too many little things there. I think more and more people, back to the subject, it's important subject, I think more and more people are realizing that the answers we had in the 90s are not good enough for today, because we hadn't been challenged at this point. We weren't where we are today. And we just, if you hadn't thought it through, it's when you're challenged that you start going, huh, I had never really thought about what the relationship of those things are supposed to be. And I remember when I taught systematic theology, one of the things that I would say to students is, my job is to step on your toes. My job is to challenge you. If I don't, you're wasting your time here. So now we're in a global situation where a lot of us have been able to be very comfortable, and we've been able to be very comfortable in our traditions and very comfortable, let's be honest, in our eschatologies. Because eschatology isn't just simply, I talk to some folks and they honestly think the biggest dispute in eschatology is between pre-trib, mid-trib, and post-trib. And honestly, it's not even between how you understand millenniums, whether you're a-mill, post-mill, pre-mill, that type of stuff. It really is directly connected to, again, God's ultimate purposes in what he's doing in this world. What is his end game? And if you don't have a sovereign God, you don't have an end game anyways. God's just doing what best he can do. But if you have a sovereign God, then enters into all of this stuff, into all of it. And I'm seeing that more and more clearly as these things go on. So there were a couple things I just want to say. I don't understand why I'm going to blame Rich. Rich, are you just not sending all the apology emails through to me? Mm-hmm. The apology emails. Because they must be coming in.
What's an apology email?
Apology. Look, what was it, November? November, December, somewhere around there, I, for example, mentioned on this program something called ADE. Okay? And I explained briefly what it was, what the concerns of what scientists were saying, that the vaccines that were being developed at that time, because they rolled out in December, basically, utilized a mechanism that had been abandoned a number of times because once they got into animal studies, had caused mortality. And one of the issues that people were concerned about is something called ADE. It's when your antibodies, when you artificially create them, but don't use the natural system to bring them about, they can not be as robust as they should be. And what happens is a new strain of the disease comes along. Your body thinks you've already got the antibodies to it, and hence you are rendered either more susceptible or defenseless in the worst case scenarios against the new variants because your body thinks it's already ready for that and it's not. And so it doesn't create the proper immune response when you encounter a new variant, which we would naturally have if we had natural immunity from exposure or from the old style inoculations and vaccines. So I mentioned this, and of course, all the folks with the tinfoil hats, conspiracy theory stuff, are immediate, man, it was just such a shame when James White used to just talk theology, and now he's talking wild, crazy conspiracy theories and stuff like that. And it was a part of having a meaningful foundation for analyzing whether you should take these vaccines is you need to know what the dangers are. And these folks ain't going to tell you. When you look, there were 52 new billionaires created during 2020. And guess which area had the most of them? Big pharma and medical. Hundreds and hundreds of billions, if not $1 trillion. Has gone into that field worldwide. You don't think that kind of money is not causing a tremendous amount of suppression of meaningful data? The FDA just approved the Pfizer vaccine without any public comment? Really? Because they have no response to these things. And everybody knows it. I mean, I certainly can recognize when someone's running from a running from an argument. But here is this is from the Journal of Infection. Now, you know, that's a real medical journal because no one else would name it Journal of Infection. If you only Only those really geeky people are going to subscribe to the Journal of Infection. Your wife's not going to allow that on the kitchen table. You know what I mean? Your wife might allow the Journal of Infection on the kitchen table? Okay, fine. I'm not going to say anything more about that. This is from... Okay, here's the title. Infection-Enhancing Anti-SARS COVID-2 Antibodies Recognize Both the Original Wuhan D614G Strain and Delta Variants, A Potential Risk for Mass Vaccination? Here's the highlights. This is the highlights before the abstract. Infection-enhancing antibodies have been detected in... Oh, why didn't you not... Okay, let's see if we can... There we go. Infection-enhancing antibodies have been detected in symptomatic COVID-19. Antibody-dependent enhancement, parentheses... ADE, parentheses closed, is a potential concern for vaccines. That's what I said in November of last year. And that's why I'm asking, why aren't you sending all the apology emails through? Because there must be, everybody who went after me must be apologizing now, right?
So you apparently have forgotten what you said at the very beginning of the show about people digging the hole deeper and deeper, and they don't realize they're stuck in it. No apology tours happening over here.
No apology letters, huh? Okay. Enhancing antibodies recognize both the Wuhan strain and Delta variants. ADE of Delta variants is a potential risk for current vaccines. Vaccine formulations lacking ADB epitope are suggested. This is the paper. Okay? So, what you could get kicked off of social media for misinformation for over a year ago is now the stuff of the introduction and highlights of medical papers today. I had no control over that. But what it means is the people who raised these questions were raising absolutely valid issues. And what was the response? Kick them out, fire them, censor them, suppress them. And for some people in this audience, you people just don't know what you're talking about.
So my question is, how many of those people's lives, families, jobs, careers got ruined before the rest of them decided to wake up and actually pay attention?
Well, I'm not sure it's possible to wake up right now, certainly not in Australia, which has just simply become a police state and has capitulated on all levels of freedom. I'm sorry, what a shame. But man, the Aussies and the Kiwis, they're just like, whatever our government says, we will do. So a bunch of this stuff is coming out. So for example, the Children's Health Defense website links to a, this is, the paper's linked here in the article. Study: fully vaccinated healthcare workers carry 251 times viral load, pose threat to unvaccinated patients' coworkers. So if you want to know why the masks all started coming back, it's because it has been demonstrated beyond all question now in multiple studies that the Delta variant in vaccinated people produces minimally 250, I've seen over 300 times the viral load in the nose of fully vaccinated people. Now, what's funny is, why don't they, I don't know why, but why don't they talk about unvaccinated people? Because it sounds, as I'm reading it, I could be wrong, but it sounds as I'm reading it, that it doesn't produce the same viral load in unvaccinated people. You know what that means, don't you? Here, let me... Here. So this is from the Oxford University Clinical Research Group, published August 10th in Lancet. The study found vaccinated individuals carry 251 times the load of COVID-19 viruses in their nostrils compared to the unvaccinated. While moderating the symptoms of infection, the jab allows vaccinated individuals to carry unusually high viral loads without becoming ill at first, potentially transforming them into pre-symptomatic super spreaders. This phenomenon may be the source of the shocking post-vaccination surges in heavily vaccinated populations globally. Yeah, so all like that one little Caribbean country, and then now Israel, super spikes, they're the most vaccinated places on the planet. Super spikes of cases. And all they can tell us is, yeah, well, you don't get quite as sick. Oh, I don't remember that being the big selling point of vaccines only a matter of days ago. I do remember reporters going, so if I get vaccinated, then I'm not going to be able to pass this on to my loved ones, right? And now it's, no, actually, it'll make you a super spreader. So that doctor up in Idaho, who again, you know, people are like, well, I saw a fact check article about him. Well, there's a fact check article about everybody that's not part of the narrative. But I love the way he put it because it makes such perfect sense. We are now force vaccinating everyone. Like if you work for Delta, $200 a month, allegedly for medical costs because you're not vaccinated. Baloney. That is pure bullying on the part of Delta. Delta, shame on you. Mark them down because the truth's going to come out eventually. And you're going to see the people that were behind this and the people that cooperated and the cowards that gave in. Mark them down. Fire them, get rid of them. But here you have other studies, I've got them right here, saying that in less than 50-year-olds, the current vaccines have dropped to as low as 31% efficacy. You're going to force that on people? As the doctor in Idaho put it, we are vaccinating everyone for last year's disease. He's right. He's right. And here's the question. What about the next variant? Because I also have an article here that says that some enterprising researchers started looking at samples from the earliest COVID-19 survivors and have clear evidence that they carried within them genetically modified by human beings viruses. That it's like a little flag sticking up going, hi, I was made by humans. What if the next variant that comes down the road at the end of this year has already been designed? Knowing what the first one would produce. And it will absolutely press the mega ADE button. What's going on right now, this very day? Our Department of Defense is demanding that everyone in the military get a vaccine that for them will be less than 31% effective, will make them super spreaders, the entirety of the military. What if the next variant is just waiting to be released that goes full on ADE and wipes out the U.S. military? Gee, where could that have come from? Oh, conspiracies! I've been right all along. It's just common sense. It's just like sit back Take Romans 1 and mix in $1 trillion. And what will people be willing to do? What are people willing to do? I mean, look at the lies about masks right now. Here's another one. Here's another one. I saw an advertisement. I've got a study right here. New study claims masks only 10% effective. Okay. When was it? June of last year? I'm going, hey, wait a minute. There's all these studies from 2014 to 2019, and they're all pretty much saying the same thing. This is a big fat lie. You conspiracy theorist, you're trying to kill grandma, blah, 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 blah. We're going to kick you off this whole thing. So here's a paper from August of this year, says the same thing. Anthony Fauci's emails come out. Anthony Fauci knows this to be true, too. But he only tells that to his friends, not publicly. Which is despicable, by the way. It's absolutely evil. Just despicable. Despicable human being to do that kind of thing. Just blah. But now, I'm just sitting here. I think it was on Facebook. I don't know. An advertisement came up. Can't get away from them anymore. Somebody, by the way, recently sold my phone number again. I had 11 yesterday. I've got 8 so far today. Spam calls. So I need to look back and see what I bought online and go, oh, there's a company that just put it back out there. Here's an active thing. And ding, ding, ding. So it's an advertisement from, was it 3M? It was 3M. For a truly effective biological mask, even more so than N95, which I'm sure what that means is, because this is just simply physics. The more it filters, the less you breathe. The more it filters, the less oxygen you get, and the more carbon dioxide you've got in your bloodstream. That's just the way it is. But in the text of the advertisement, it says, regular cotton face masks only filter about 10% of biological products. Oh, yeah, that's the stuff we were getting in trouble for saying last summer, you anti-maskers, you're doing misinformation. And now 3M can advertise with that, and they're not being kicked off the internet for doing that, because actually everyone knew that that was true all along. That's why they talked about double masking and triple masking. Well, if you triple mask, you're up to 30%, and you're probably about to die. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, live not according to the lies. Live not according to lies. But we are. And in Washington State, it's that horrible little picture. Ugh. My daughter retweeted it. Or was that on Facebook? I think it was both. Where up in Minnesota, it's a picture of them teaching the little kids to walk like zombies in the hallways with their hands out to keep other little kids social distance from them. So that's how you're supposed to, with your little face shields and your masks. And yes, sir, I saw that you have raised the golden microphone of French superiority.
So you were walking by my desk the other day while I was on the phone, and that phone call was a gentleman, a very nice gentleman, very respectful gentleman, who was identified himself as a medical doctor, and he was raising concerns about the fact that you retweeted this other doctor.
Oh, the guy in Idaho?
Right. And in the conversation, because I'm like, okay, let's you and I have a conversation here. Let's talk about some things I've been talking about for well over a year. And I asked him, I said, do you know what someone looks like after using a paint sprayer wearing an N95 mask? And he wasn't quite tracking with me. I said, as soon as they take it off, you can see where all of the water molecules went, how they penetrated the mask, how they're up your nose, how they're in your mouth. That's when the conversation started going towards, well, you know, it at least slows things down. And then eventually it was, well, they're at least 10% effective. I asked him, I said, Doctor, would you walk into a room filled with carcinogens in the air wearing that mask and spend an hour in there?
Right.
Well, no. So there's a reason why an automobile painter wears a NOSH mask. First of all, it's just strapped super tight to his face. It's got rubber around it. It's got layers along with charcoal in it. All right. But nobody is out there talking about us using NOSH masks. In fact, some people have done it and they laugh. Okay.
Don't give them ideas.
But the point here is, here's the simple question. If we were actually dealing with the Spanish flu, would they be playing these games? Because that's exactly what they're doing.
Well, they did back then, but they didn't have anything else to do.
But if we were looking at truly millions in this country, like they said this was going to be, dead in a few months, millions dead per month, they wouldn't have the room to be playing these games. Because it would literally be a scenario where the guy in the cart comes by your house and says, bring out your dead.
Yeah.
And an N95 isn't going to survive that kind of thinking. So the whole mask thing, folks, you got to wake up and recognize it's all for show. There's
submission.
Well, it's like the little old lady who Wendy's used to say, where's the beef? There ain't any.
Pure submission, pure lies. No two ways about it. And, of course, as people say, what it does is it makes people think that they are protected by it when, in fact, they're not. One last thing real quick. Another study. I had all these. There's an explosion of studies over the weekend. Real-world data from Israel linked Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine to an elevated risk of heart inflammation, researchers said this week. Israeli scientists found that vaccination likely caused myocarditis or heart inflammation in 1 to 5 people per 100,000 who wouldn't have otherwise suffered the condition. However, they also said that getting COVID-19 was linked to a higher risk with 11 inflammation events out of 100 attributed to the disease. Now, I'm not sure why. Okay, 11. Okay. Most of the heart inflammation cases post-vaccination were in young males. The 21 people who had myocarditis in the vaccinated group had a median age of 25, and 90.9% were women. So the argument here is, yes, it does cause myocarditis, but getting COVID is worse than getting the myocarditis, at least over a larger number of people. That's the argument now, is that, yeah, there's risks with these vaccines. So the question is, why does it cause myocarditis? Why then would you force the people who are in the least danger of COVID-19 to run that risk? I don't know. But the idea is, well, yeah, okay, yeah, it is out there. Well, why at first were they so averse to admitting it? Well, part of it has to do with, you know, now that the Pfizer one has been FDA approved, they're now having to find a way to backdoor immunity from lawsuits. Because once something's licensed, then you can sue if you have negative results from it. So it's all money. It's all money. But there's an admission now. Well, yeah, it does cause that. But initially, everybody who said, hey, this is happening. Oh, no. Conspiracy theory, tin hats. No, actually, it was happening. Oh well. All right. So I guess the resident of the White House spoke, and oh, good grief, he didn't. He did. He quoted from Isaiah. When the Lord says, who shall I send? The American military has been answering for a long time. Here I am, Lord, send me. yeah, great. All right, well, I didn't hear it. I'll have to go now listen to it. I'm seeing lots of comments about it. But there you go. Hopefully some of that was helpful to you. But like I said, I'm sure the apology emails are coming. I'm sure they will come eventually. Okay, they're not coming. I realize that. I was being facetious all along. Really was. But it does make a point. Let's see. What is today? Today is Thursday, isn't it? Yes, yes. Well, we will see what happens. Now, I think next week should be pretty normal. And it's not till like the third week of September that everything gets weird and crazy and I head back out on the road. But we didn't really miss that many programs. Just had to move them around. So that's what we'll continue doing. I had some more Gregory set up, but I ended up spending a lot of time on all the background issues for Romans 13 and stuff. So, and in fact, I'm going to be on with Chris Arnzen in a couple weeks. I think the 8th, and we're going to do Romans 13 at that time too. So it is important. Thanks for watching the program today. We will see you next time if we still have a YouTube account and still online next time. God bless.